You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill, and once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Peter LaBarbera, president of Americans for Truth about homosexuality. We are a single organization devoted to opposing and exposing the powerful and well-heeled homosexual, bisexual, transgender, lesbian, genderqueer is another part of their fold. They just have all a continually expanding acronym. And we have lots to talk about today. We have a new guest, Greg Quinlan, who's a friend of mine and who's just a wonderful guy, does tremendous work. He once was involved, lived the homosexual life. He is, I doubt he calls himself ex-gay. Greg, are you on the line?
Yes, I do call myself ex-gay.
Okay, you do call yourself ex-gay.
Yeah, I'm not ashamed of that title. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a great marketing tool, and it's short.
Yeah, because there's a lot of lot of political correctness, even within Christian circles now, Greg, and you and I have talked about it, and you have to make sure everything is framed just the right way, usually with an eye towards what the homosexual activists are saying, it seems to me.
You have to capitulate to sin.
Yeah, it's always about, well, God, there might be people who think we're intolerant, and I know you're not one of those guys. Greg Quinlan is the president of a wonderful organization, Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays and Gays, PFOX. And folks, I want you to support Americans for Truth, obviously do it from our website, but I also want you to support Greg's organization, PFOX. The website is pfox.org, that's P-F-O-X. I think bang for your buck, Greg. Our two organizations produce a lot with a little, you know. And Greg, how long have you been president of PFOX?
That's been about a year and a half now that they hijacked me. President of PFOX, I walked in late to a board meeting because I couldn't find a parking space, and before I knew it, I was the president.
Right.
Like, what? Who did this?
So the lesson from that is arrange your parking early, you know, get to the board meeting early, unless you want to...
The night before, that's what you do.
Well, Greg, we're going to get into your whole story, and Greg was a speaker at our Truth Academy in Chicago. He is speaking at our upcoming Truth Academy in Columbus, Ohio. That's April 1st and 2nd. And if you're in the Midwest, or even we just got our first registrant from California, Greg, so we need people to come to this. We know there's going to be some gay activists there. In fact, a guy I met on Twitter is a gay atheist. He's showing up. But the Americans for Truth Academy is all about training people in how to confront this huge juggernaut, this powerful force in America called the homosexual activist movement, the LGBT, whatever you call it. It's all about legitimizing homosexuality. And Greg, your talks were wonderful at the Chicago Truth Academy. You gave your testimony. The world is saying that this fight is over, but our goal, and I know you share this goal at PFOX, it's not over. We will continue to stand for the truth no matter what.
Well, look at the strides we have made. I mean, we need to stop, you know, whining because we lose a battle here or there. Because even when they do, they, meaning the homosexual agenda, and they is a perfectly good English word, by the way. It's a perfectly good word. That's also now hate speech. They, them, you know, I'm a they, I'm a them, you're a they, you're a them, everybody's a they or a them. And so it's okay to refer to them as they or them.
But no, yeah, but when you're getting into pronouns, when I was at the Creating Change Conference sponsored by the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, Greg, I don't know if you know, but I went undercover there in Minneapolis, and they would introduce people by saying, tell us your name and then tell us your preferred pronoun. I never saw that before. My name is John, and I prefer her.
Yeah, right. Anyway, it's insane. But remember that every time that they feel they have won a marriage battle, almost every time, the people, when they have the opportunity to do so, have rose up to stop it. It just happened in Iowa when the people fired their Supreme Court justices who imposed same-sex marriage on them. It's happened in California twice. It's happened in Maine with a people's veto. It's happening again, and it'll happen again in Maryland, apparently, because tomorrow the Maryland legislature, then both chambers, will have voted on and imposing homosexual marriage on the people of the great state of Maryland. And for our Catholic listeners, Maryland, who is named after the Virgin Mary.
Okay, Greg, hold on one sec. We're recording this on Thursday, February 24th. So this may have already happened by the time listeners hear this on the 26th, Saturday, because we pre-record and we're doing at least a two-part interview with Greg because he's got a lot to say. And Greg, you have testified, your bio states that you've testified in a number of these marriage fights all across the country, because you know you're living proof that change is possible. As you say, homosexuality doesn't have to last a lifetime. Let's get into your story. Tell us how you began. How did you get involved in the homosexual lifestyle?
Well, I had a daddy problem, but my dad was around. My father was an angry, violent man. One term I've heard used is rageaholic. It kind of fits. My dad was an Archie Bunker. The only difference between Archie Bunker, my father was Archie Bunker, had some mixed up belief in God, and my dad claimed to be an atheist. So my born again Christian mother marries a non-believer. That's the first strike against me before I was even born. Second thing was that Archie Bunker wasn't physically violent. My father was to one of his kids to me. I'm the oldest of four, and he used to beat me up on a regular basis. I never knew why. When I was 8 years old, he was working on the car, and I knew what was about to happen. He was about to explode. And I was outside with my playmates, and it was a cold autumn day, and I turned around and looked at him to try to defuse this, and I said, "You hate me, don't you?" And he turned around and looked at me and laughed, and as he said that, he says, "Yes, I hate you," as he took the Lord's name in vain. That wasn't a revelation. It was like, yeah, I knew that. I knew that.
Now, this is when you were 8 years old?
I was 8 years old.
How terrible is that, to have your own father tell you that he hates you? Wow.
Yeah. And he may have, in his, you know, redneck kind of way, thought that he was being funny, but, you know, it, like I said, it wasn't, I already knew that. I just heard him say it.
Now, why do you think, are you saying that your father had sort of a special hatred for you, or is something about you bothered him?
I don't know what it was.
Because you bother a lot of people, Greg.
Well, you know, I was the...
I'm kidding.
Focus of his venom, it seemed like. So he couldn't hit women, but he could hit little boys. I don't know.
Right.
As far as I know, he never even slapped or spanked my sisters. So it was one of these, you know, things. When I was 9 years old, I came to faith in Jesus Christ, and it was the real deal. It was in a junior church, and I know it was real. But I didn't have the discipleship I needed, even though I was doing some of it on my own. And I remember praying as a little boy in the top bunk of the, you know, I shared a room with my brother, asking God that whatever happens, don't let go of me, which he never did. But in the process, too, when I was 10 years old, a friend of my brother found his dad's Playboys, and we were looking at them. Now, remember, this is the 60s now. I'm in my early 50s.
And where are you living?
In Ohio.
Ohio.
Yeah. So I'm in Ohio, and we're looking at Playboys. And in the 60s, now remember, that's prime time tonight, but back then it was still titillating to young boys. So a boy that was with us, he was a couple years older than me, and he may have just turned 13, introduced me to sex. And at that moment, I got something I wasn't getting at home, I wasn't getting at school, and I wasn't getting in the church. I got affection, I got approval, and I got affirmation. Somebody was touching me without hitting me. Someone was talking to me without screaming at me and calling me names. Somebody made me feel like I had value and worth. Besides, it was sex. It was physically pleasurable, so I went back for more. I call it a willing molestation.
And I want to ask, when I was at Creating Change, there was a story of a woman talking about when she was younger, how another girl, a slightly older girl, I think, when she was very young, basically introduced her to sex like you're talking about. I mean, does this happen a lot in the lives of homosexual men where it's not necessarily an old predator, but another boy or something?
Yes, and I want to make sure that the listeners understand this. Because of the proliferation of pornography, and I'm seeing this more and more with young men that I counsel now with a ministry I have called Living Free, They have been introduced to pornography at a very young age, usually by cousins or siblings, or they accidentally come upon it because they have access now to the Internet, free access to the Internet. So they come upon this stuff, and they're introduced to it. So then they are somehow, either through a friend or a sibling of the same age or similar age, are introduced to sex. The identical twins, there have been three sets over the years that I've dealt with. One of them was sexually molested, and they introduced the other one to that same-sex act. Which, by the way, the twin studies prove that no one's born gay. There is no DNA. But moving on.
Explain that quickly, Greg, because they would all be identically the same
identical
behavior.
Identical twins share the same DNA, the exact same DNA. So if they share the exact same chromosomal makeup, they would both, and if homosexuality were a genetic defect or genetic in any way, then both would be homosexual. However, the twin study is done in New Zealand, and it's done on multiple thousands of twins over the years in multiple countries, show that the incidence is 11%. Well, it can't be 11% if it's DNA. It would have to be 100%. And I contend and challenge everyone that the 11% is because one or both were molested at the same time, or one was molested and the other one introduced the other one to the same-sex act.
Right. And you've counseled somebody where that actually happened.
I've counseled three people where that's actually happened.
Wow. Well, Greg, we have a lot to talk about. We have a two-part interview. We're talking to Greg Quinlan, who is the president of Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays and Gays. The website is PFOX, that's PFOX.org. That's PFOX.org. Our website, Americans for Truth, is AmericansForTruth.org. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody, to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarbera, and our group, Americans for Truth, is devoted to opposing and exposing the powerful homosexual activist movement. We're talking with Greg Quinlan, who's a friend of mine. He's a very talented pro-family warrior. Greg is ex-gay. He was involved in homosexuality, and he got out of it with God's help. That's what we're talking about here. His group is PFOX.org. Our group is Americans for Truth. And Greg will be a speaker at our upcoming Americans for Truth Academy. This is our second one, where it is co-sponsored with Mission America. Their website is missionamerica.com. And that's Linda Harvey, who's also a friend of ours. And that is April 1st and 2nd in Columbus. This is a 1.5-day event, a little shorter than the previous one, Greg, which was pretty comprehensive.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It was good.
Maybe, yeah. In fact, the poor the gay spies who were in there had to sit through the whole thing, but some of them even complained. But Greg's a speaker, and he's going to share his testimony and his experience in fighting the gay activist lobby at the Americans for Truth Academy. You can hit the bar on our website. There's a banner ad on top of the website at AmericansForTruth.com. Sign up. Try to go there. It's only $75. You will not regret it. This is a time, Greg, when we have to re-energize our people, not give up, as some Christians are saying, but rededicate ourselves to standing for the truth on this issue.
The truth will always win out if we make a stand for it. The problem is that we've already surrendered, and that's a real big problem.
Yeah, we talk about all the time, Greg, and in the course of these interviews, I want to get your take on it because, you know, nobody can accuse you of hating. Nobody can accuse you of being, you came from this lifestyle. You understand, and yet
I'm not homophobic.
Yes, well,
I don't hate the homosexual.
Yes, and that seems to be implicit in all of the criticisms, is that we're too harsh. I had somebody tell me through another person that our methods are outmoded. There's all sorts of things happening within the Christian world to try to cop out of this culture war. And like you said, you just have to stand for the truth. Okay, now, Greg, so you get basically introduced to homosexuality, or was by this
pornography and the experimentation with a boy across the street who was older.
And how long did this go on?
Oh, golly, this went on for a long time, a couple of years.
And your parents had no clue?
No, no clue at all.
His parents had no clue?
No.
Wow.
No.
Is there anything your
father had Playboys also?
You know, your father, you got the play. Did he leave his Playboys all around the house? Did you?
Well, it wasn't my dad's Playboys. My mother made sure of that never was brought into the house. But it was a friend's father's Playboys. And the friend who was molesting me, his father also had Playboys. So, you know, it's like we go look at that, and that was like the introduction to the sex act.
Right. So this went on for a couple years. Are you being drawn into, how does this fit into your...
I'm living a double life.
Yeah.
I have this thing going on inside me. I'm now imprinted. My first sexual experience is same sex. It was repeated over a couple of years, often. So with that, and masturbation, by the way, is a same sex act. Just so you know, you may be watching for some listening here. You may be watching heterosexual porn, but you are performing a sex act on yourself. Hello. So you know, making excuses is, you know. Anyway,
this guy—that's
a whole nother program.
And I was going to ask you: is there anything, if you're looking back, that your parents could have done to prevent this from happening, or was it something that they really didn't have any control over?
In this sense, I would say they had no control over it. However, I have to tell you that, you know, the way I was raised and the attitude of my father obviously predisposed me to this, to these actions.
Right. Okay, so now you're a couple of years you're going on, and this is going. Is this a regular activity, you with this guy?
Yes.
Okay, and then what happens?
Well, you know, like I said, I'm living a double life. I had a heart for the Lord. I loved Him. I wanted to serve Him, but I'm having this dual problem here. So I go to Bible college. I graduate high school. I go to Bible college.
Hold on, because I'm trying to. You know, I didn't have this problem.
I didn't even want that kind of detail.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I don't want the detail, but what I'm thinking is, so you're 13. You're not like other boys. You're carrying this incredible secret, and it's
right.
A shameful secret.
Well, I hid that secret with my Christianity too. I carried my Bible to school. I remember this is the 60s and 70s. So I carry my Bible to school. I was, you know, so people kind of left me alone. I was a talented singer, studious kid, so pretty and pretty popular. You know, I wasn't necessarily good looking. That happened later. and I, you know,
yeah, you have a face for radio like me, Greg. Come on,
I have a radio face. so I went to, you know, I was involved in all this stuff at school. Like I said, I was a very popular kid. I was president of my sophomore class. I was vice president of student council. I was, you know, president of my senior class, secretary of Key Club. You know, I was very involved.
Right.
And so in all that involvement and all that popularity and all that kind of stuff, so I was a pretty well-liked kid. So I did hide all that stuff. And, I had girlfriends. I had interest in the other sex, but I never acted out on it sexually because, again, in the church, you see, we didn't talk about homosexuality, but we did talk about adultery, and adultery was only with the opposite sex.
Mm-hmm.
See, we're not teaching the whole truth, but, again, that's another message because the church needs to learn how to respond to the issues and to the doctrine in the Bible. We don't give a very good apologetic for how to deal with sin. And I'm speaking, in, of course, in a massive... sweeping generalizations there.
Right.
So that's how I lived it. So like I said, I went to, I was in the All-Ohio State Fair Youth Choir. I went to college in Florida, ran out of money, and the college I went to was for Bible college. It was to be a pastor. I did feel the call of God on my life.
Hmm.
So I left college, came back, became an LPN, a licensed practical nurse, really stands for lousy paid nurse.
Now, before you go on, did you have any other homosexual experiences since that boy, that youth experience?
Not with other people.
Right.
But at this point in my life, the lust is incredible. And I felt as if I was going to explode if I didn't do something about it. So it was either commit suicide or come out of the closet. So being having some fear of God, I decided it was better to come out of the closet than it was to commit suicide, which is exactly what I did, and went to my gay bar, disco, that was during the Bee Gees, you know, Saturday Night Fever and all those John Travolta things. And I remember prior to that, I was watching a movie, and the movie was about a man who was married but was having same-sex attraction and eventually left his wife for another man. So in all of that, you know, I came out of the closet, and it was fun for a while. There's pleasure in sin for a season. I was having a blast. But remember, I'm in the healthcare profession, and that's when the AIDS epidemic hit, and we didn't call it AIDS then. We called it GRID, gay-related infectious disease. Not very PC, but eventually they came up with acquired immune deficiency syndrome and then identified the HIV virus. So I became a volunteer with the Dayton Area AIDS Task Force. I was a friend of some of these guys. I would help them with their medication. Also, in this process, too, I was going back to school to become an RN.
Your parents? Did they know you were homosexual?
No. I was out, but I wasn't out. That comes a little bit later. Anyway, I'm a volunteer. I'm doing these things, helping these guys, and they would ask me questions knowing about my Christian background, that I was going to be a pastor. I was doing all this stuff. They said, does God hate me? Am I going to hell? Would you read my favorite Bible verse at my funeral? Would you do my eulogy? Would you tell my son and daughter what happened to Daddy? That's pretty rough stuff. And I did all those things, and it was hard. And simultaneously, while all this is going on, a guy I was dating took me to this fancy foo-foo reception of the Human Rights Campaign Fund, which we all now know as HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, the largest gay and lesbian political organization in the country, ranks as the ninth largest of all independent political action committees, and chiefly responsible for the billions of dollars in AIDS research and support money that comes from the federal government. I still remember the commercial. Now, I was a volunteer, not an employee. I founded the Dayton Committee for the Human Rights Campaign Fund, raised tens of thousands of dollars out of that organization, doing black tie dinners and cocktail parties and other social events for this organization. And the reason why I got involved was because of the AIDS epidemic. Because they were extremely professional. They knew what they were doing. They were well-respected on Capitol Hill. Even if you didn't respect the issue for which they were there, they knew what they were doing, and they knew how to do it well. When we went to Capitol Hill to lobby, the women were in skirts and the men weren't. I mean, we looked normal, whatever that is. And so they taught me how to do grassroots activism, how to read legislation, how to lobby my elected official, and I would do that. I'd go to Capitol Hill about 2 to 3 times a year. I'd come back to Ohio, lobby the delegation there, inform my constituency of what was going on and all of that, and it was again that popular personality that I seem to have had all worked for me. But at the same time, I am miserable. Relationships aren't working out, and as time went on, I watched 100 of my friends and acquaintances die of AIDS before I quit counting. There have been more since then.
It's incredible.
So I was going to funerals and all that, and the viewings, and doing the eulogies, and it got to the point where I wasn't going to do that anymore. I'd still visit these guys in the hospital, I'd still go to their homes, but I would not go to the funerals, I would not go to the funeral homes, I wouldn't participate in any of that, because I was done with it.
Were you sensing, just starting to connect the dots?
I was connecting the dots. I started, but my questions came a little later. Now, one of the things that would happen, since I'm one of these, I go whole hog, I know you haven't noticed that, but I go whole hog in what I do, all in. And so as part of my activism, I would watch the other side, those Bible-thumbing homophobic hypocrites, Christians, you people that are listening on the radio. That's what I would do. So I would watch things like PTL. Remember them? That's Jim and Tammy Faye Baker.
Right.
Yeah, so I'd watch that program and watch it for the entertainment value, the Rivers of Mascara.
And, okay, 30 seconds, Craig, to the break.
Okay.
Keep going.
Oh, so I would watch TBN and the 700 Club. I wanted to go through the TBN choke, Pat Robertson. By the way, I've been on this show 4 times. Come back to the Lord. God has a sense of humor. But in all of that, I was watching people's testimonies. People who had come out of the homosexual lifestyle. And again, that double-minded thing inside me. One part of me was angry as I could be. That's a lie. It's not true. I was born this way.
Okay, hold on right there. Talking to Greg Quinlan, PFOX.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your tax-deductible gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Hello, everybody. We're talking to Greg Quinlan. I'm Pete LaBarbera. And we're talking about his exodus out of the homosexual lifestyle. So, Greg, you went from wanting to choke Pat Robertson to actually being a guest on his radio, being featured on his television news program, ultimately after you left the lifestyle. So you're seeing your friends, you're burying your friends, and all these are pretty much what, gay guys in their 30s, 40s, 20s? How old?
20s to their 40s. And how taking care of these guys who were infected, you know, the drug cocktail and all that stuff. It was, you know, and some of that stuff was absolutely poisonous. But it did, stop the production of HIV. And we now know there are other things to do, especially nutritionally, that thwart the HIV virus, like selenium and a few other things. So, I was doing all of that. And
you started seeing testimonies, Christian testimonies.
Right, on television. And they would...
Because you still considered yourself did you consider yourself a faithful Christian, or what were you thinking in your mind?
No. I knew what I was doing is wrong, but I couldn't help it. That's the way it felt, and it does feel that way. I want the believers who are listening to understand that it feels like there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
It feels like it's normal. It feels like it's something that's a part of you that you've had all your life. Understand that. That is exactly how it feels. Truth or not, that's how it feels. So when you're dealing with someone who's trapped in homosexuality, or even someone that wants out, there is a disconnect there about what their created purpose and this overwhelming sense of identity with their sexual identity, which takes control of every aspect of their life.
Mm-hmm. So you felt that, what sort of dislodged that in your life? I mean, okay, you're watching these testimonies. What's next?
All those things, seeing my friends die, watching these testimonies, absolutely. And God was doing other things in my life too, to draw me back to Him. You know, answering that prayer of a little boy, whatever happens, don't let go of me. Simultaneously, when all this is going on too, my father, Archie Bunker, had smoked himself to death. He was dying. He had chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, severe emphysema, borderline diabetic, and a whole host of things, atherosclerosis. He had an abdominal aortic aneurysm the size of a grapefruit. And who got to take care of him? Who did he want around? Me, his son, the nurse. So I did those things. Now, as this is going on, you know, I get to the point where I'm watching this testimony on TVN. In California, and it's a panel discussion of several people who left the homosexual lifestyle, men and women, ex-lesbians and ex-gays. So I'm like, wow, this is amazing. And it got to the point, it was 19 years ago this past Thanksgiving, where I made a phone call 2,500 miles away from where I lived in Dayton, Ohio, to this place out in Santa Ana, California. And I had a hard time telling this guy while I'm calling. Finally, I blurted it out. I said, I'm gay, and I don't want to be like this anymore. If there's any hope, if there's any help, I need it. And this guy chuckled a little bit, and I got a little indignant. He says, no, you're just the seventh or eighth person tonight who's called for the same reason. In other words, I'm not the only one that wanted out.
Wow.
So I prayed the sinner's prayer. I knew the sinner's prayer. There weren't any bells or whistles. There weren't any fireworks. There wasn't any emotional release, but I did have some peace. And after that, I started going to church, and that's a longer story. But to make a longer story short, you know, I've through my own journey of discovering that I was not born this way, that there is no efficacious science supporting any specific biological etiology for homosexuality, not a shred. There's no gay gene. There's no biological or brain abnormalities. Everything points to a sociological, emotional problem that causes someone to go into the homosexual lifestyle. And we are abusing our children with pornography. We are abusing our children by sexualizing them at an early age. We are abusing our children by letting the schools educate our kids about the very things the parents should have control over. That's where we are, and that's how I left the homosexual lifestyle. So now, for the last 19 years, as I've walked out walking out my salvation with fear and trembling, I'm letting people know that change is possible. Some people say it's overnight. For most of us, though, including myself, it was a journey.
Mm-hmm.
My issue was forgiving my dad. I hated that man. And when we buried him in 92 or 93, after he came to the Lord, by the way, years later, God was dealing with me on that issue of forgiveness. Still same-sex attracted, still having those feelings, still having that lust, but suppressing it in every way I could, praying as much as I could. And God was revealing to me my issue was I hated my dad, and I needed to forgive him. And in a ritualistic act, I wrote down all the things I could remember why I disliked that man. And I'm giving them up to the Lord. And after a while, it wasn't a ritual. It was a catharsis. I was broken, and I was giving them up to the Lord. And when I forgave my father, that's when the same-sex attraction left.
Yeah, now you're touching on something that a lot of people are curious about. And of course, you know, the homosexual activists say, well, okay, look, there's Greg saying that he left the homosexual lifestyle, but he was suppressing same-sex feelings. But your point is, God works these things out. And still, even when you had the feelings, you had made progress because you had renounced the behavior.
Right. Right.
So when people come to you today, I'm sure you still get this, Greg. Oh, you know, Greg, I could teach myself to write left-handed. You're just suppressing it, and you're really still gay. And how do you respond when you get those sort of snide accusations?
How can you prove I'm still gay? How can you prove that anybody is gay except by a choice? Again, there's no biological, genetic evidence that shows that anyone is born this way.
Right.
But there is mountains of sociological, psychological evidence that shows that people become gay.
Right. Do you find that guys, when you're counseling, you find people say, well, Greg, and almost maybe sort of to get you, say, oh, Greg, I had a great relationship with my parents. That's not any part of it. I mean, do you hear that once in a while? And
yes, but that doesn't mean... Again, it becomes down to this, you know, what relationships did you have with your parents? I usually find out that relationship wasn't that great, that what they had was a nice friendship with no parenting.
Right. And it wasn't just your parents also. I mean, you had this early sexualization, which was completely aberrant.
Right.
There's no one way into homosexuality. Isn't there a number of ways in?
Multiple ways in, and it's all individual too. Remember, the enemy does his own little plan, individually tailor-made to the person that he's trying to take to hell with him. In the same way that the Lord has a plan of salvation, but in the process of that, he's showing us how he redeemed us, and in that process, we learn how to be redeemed from our sin, how to let go of it, how to surrender it, and how to love those who have hurt us,
right,
who have despitefully used us.
You forgave your father, and that must have been an amazing experience when you finally got that huge gorilla off your back.
And it was. That felt like that was another weight that was gone. It was another weight that was lifted. And, you know, it's just been amazing. And I've seen ever since then, too, how the enemy has tried to have a harm of mostly from family members and some friends who have done serious emotional damage to me. And how the enemy has tried to put that back on. It's that familiar thing again. And, you know, it is a choice that I make to forgive as much as it is a choice that I make to accept the manufacturer's guidelines and follow them.
Right. Our supreme manufacturer, God who made us.
Supreme manufacturer. I was created as a heterosexual. I was manufactured to be a heterosexual. I'm alive on this earth as the Lord created me to be a heterosexual. I lived as a homosexual in rebellion and ignorance, but I now know better.
Now, Greg, you've heard this new tech. I think Wayne Besson, our wonderful, you know, the nasty gay activist.
Our enemy.
Wayne Besson.
Violent, lying enemy.
Yes, and he came up with this phrase, which now a lot of the homosexual activists use. Oh, you're saying you can pray away the gay.
I say that. I don't remember ever saying that.
No, that's what he says, yes.
Well, you see, you know, he can come up with his lie. Of course, he never tried that. As I understand that he's an atheist, a very angry man, by the way. We had to have him escorted out by the badges at the NEA convention in Florida a few years back, 2006 or 2007, something like that.
Because he wants to take you down, ultimately.
All you have to do is Google my name and Wayne's together, and you'll see the love.
Well, and we're talking Wayne Besson, who founded a group called, ironically, Truth Wins Out. He's got another guy working over there now, Evan Hurst, who's even, I think, almost makes Wayne look tame. Evan Hurst is another very bitter homosexual atheist. And but their thing is taking down people like Greg Quinlan, making, and every time they have an ex-gay who goes back into the lifestyle, they trumpet that and say, hey, change is not possible.
Right. And the thing is, people fall off the wagon. Everybody fall. I mean, we could all return to our vomit.
Right.
We could all be a pig and go back to the mire. I could choose tomorrow to do that stupid act, but, I don't choose to do that.
Right.
And if that happens, and I have guys that do that, some of the people I counsel, I say, okay, you fell. What do? When you fall, you get up.
Right. And how many guys and women now? I mean, there's all sorts of sexual sin. People are returning to it. People fall and they get up again. I mean, this is not exclusive to homosexuality. But one thing that is different is most people regard homosexuality as sort of a different. It's alien to them, and so they look for these. That's why it's treated differently.
Right.
By most people.
As I tell everybody, a lot of people think this, and I'm making this generalization true because it's true. The only abomination in the Bible is homosexuality. And a lot of people believe that.
Right.
They think that because they can't identify another abomination. There are 67 abominations in the Bible. 27 of those are geared to the temple, which leaves 40 still current.
Right.
There are 40 abominations in the Bible. And an abomination is anything God calls an abomination, anything he says he hates, anything he finds detestable. And a homosexuality is one of those.
Right. But there is a tendency, and I think it is because it's sort of weird to a lot of people, to give it a special treatment. I want to talk more about that with Greg Quinlan. Greg will be speaking at our upcoming Truth Academy in Columbus, April 1st and 2nd. Find out more. It's Columbus, Ohio. Find out more about that at AmericansForTruth.org. Everybody, to part one of our interview with Greg Quinlan, who is the president of PFOX, which it stands for Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays and Gays. Their website is pfox.org. Greg will be a speaker at our upcoming Truth Academy in Columbus, Ohio. The theme of that is the hate labeling of Christians. Greg, I'm sure you're called a hater almost as much as I am.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I'm a hater. I'm a self-flagellating idiot. Those are the clean things I can say.
I could just hear the hate. I could just hear the hate coming through the radio lines, Greg, the liberals' idea of an argument is calling somebody names. At least the gay left, that's what they're all about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, most of the left is about calling other people names.
Right.
But that is part of it, though. And frankly, as I put it, and it seems to help us, though, when they call us names.
Yeah.
It seems to be something that works for us in that people, why are you so nasty to these people? I don't agree with them either, but you have to be so hateful.
Right.
And I can be a provocateur, too, if it suits the goal.
Oh, you're so innocent, Greg. Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. That'll be the
But there is
anyway.
A new thing. I want to tell you, Greg, when I was at Creating Change, which is the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force annual grassroots conference, and this was held in Minneapolis, and we had some people who went undercover, one of the things that they said was, we've got to get more sophisticated. If we're going to change those few percentage that we need in the evangelical camp, we've got to stop calling them names. We've got to stop putting down their faith. And we need to talk about things that will win them over. Talk about God is love. Talk about inclusion. And so they're getting very sophisticated, Greg. They know that to get their majority that they need to win that prize of so-called homosexual marriage, they've got to find new ways to win those evangelicals over to their side.
Right. And one of the things they use is the phrase that Jesus Christ never said anything about homosexuality.
Right.
Well, first of all, the term was done in the 1800s, so he didn't have it in 30 A.D. But we need to understand that he did define human sexuality, a family, and marriage. He did it in Matthew 19 and Mark 10, and he's quoting Genesis. And Jesus Christ, perfect God and sinless man in one body, can do that because he was there.
Now, Greg, we've got 6 minutes to the end of this part one. The organization that you did activist work for, the homosexual organization, back when you were in the lifestyle, Human Rights Campaign, is
that
now...
I volunteered for. Actually, we say that volunteered. Wayne Besson has this hissy fit that I never worked there.
Yes, you volunteered for the Human Rights Campaign. They love to seize on technicalities, Greg.
Yes.
The point is you were a pro-gay activist. Human Rights Campaign is celebrating, if you go on their website, well, today, which is the 24th of February, there's a huge banner, Administration Drops DOMA Defense. Human Rights Campaign is celebrating, let me read from their press release dated February 23rd, 2011. Human Rights Campaign today praised the Obama administration's decision not to continue its defense of the so-called Defense of Marriage Act. Now, little interpolation, I'm saying right here, the Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, was signed into law in 1996 by a Democratic president, Bill Clinton. But HRC says they're celebrating that Obama is not going to defend DOMA in court. DOMA denies federal recognition and benefits to legally married same-sex couples and purports to allow states to deny recognition to those couples as well. Here's a quote from Joe Salmanese, the president of the Human Rights Campaign. This is a monumental decision for the thousands of same-sex couples and their families who want nothing more than the same rights and dignity afforded to other married couples, said President Joe Salmanese. As the president, Obama, has stated previously, DOMA unfairly discriminates against Americans, and we applaud him for fulfilling his oath to defend critical constitutional principles, unquote. Your reaction, Greg, to this incredible decision by President Obama?
What a pack of lies, and Barack Hussein Obama is a chief of hypocrites. Here's why. First of all, the man, when he was campaigning to become the president of the United States, said that he supported traditional marriage between one man and one woman, but said civil unions are okay. Now he's saying that we can't defend the Defense of Marriage Act, which he has defended now in excess of 2 years with his Justice Department. And the Defense of Marriage Act was defended by previous Justice Departments, including Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. There is no excuse for what he's done. Now, let's take a look at this, all right? Let's take a look at this. Here's a constitutional attorney that says that we can't defend this. First of all, and he declares it unconstitutional. Problem with that is the executive branch is obligated by the separation of powers to enforce and defend the laws passed by the legislative branch. That's Congress. Barack Obama is now saying he refuses to do his constitutional duty. And by declaring that the Defense of Marriage Act is unconstitutional, he has now stepped in and become the Supreme Court, which is not his job because he does not sit on that court.
Right. Well, you know, he is the anointed one, though, Greg.
Anointed by the enemy, yes. Anointed by Satan himself. Anyway, I have a very low opinion of that man, and it gets lower every time.
Well, Greg, remember back, and I sent a Twitter out on this, and I'm on Twitter, and if you want to follow us, it's Twitter, and just put my name in there, Peter LaBarbera. But I sent a message to Rick Warren, Pastor Rick Warren. Remember that debate when Rick Warren asked Obama if he support a gay marriage question, and McCain, and Obama said that he supports marriage as between a man and a woman, and he said it so seriously. I mean, come on, is this guy a poser or what?
This guy is what he needs to be to do, but to do his agenda, whatever that is, and many of us are suspect. But you have to understand, too, why in the world would you take something so out of left field and do this now? Because, you see, he needs the public sector unions to succeed.
And he also needs the gay money.
He needs the gay money, and well, that's the whole point I'm trying to make here. Those private sector unions, though, the public is now getting aware that, wait a minute, they're making more money with better benefits, and I'm the one subsidizing their income.
Right.
I'm making less with less benefits, and I have to pay extra for the benefits I have.
And then they take that money and they use it to elect Democratic congressmen and legislators.
Right. And then, well, what they do is that then they extract dues from their membership to elect Democratic congressmen to take away more of my rights and impose things on me like nationalized health care. So the public has gotten that idea. Now, now that that has happened, what does Barack Obama do? What do we do? What do we do? Panic mode. Oh, I know what we'll do. We'll stop defending the Defense of Marriage Act, which, by the way, is now supposed to be being defended and challenged in two federal district courts, two separate different courts. And now they're saying they won't even try to defend it.
Right.
This is an abomination. And this is what's wrong here, because we now have a president that doesn't want to be president, what he does is he defines the presidency as he goes to suit him so that he can get reelected in 2012.
Yeah, he's pandering to his homosexual activist base. This is incredible. It's audacious, and it's perfect Obama. He's either banking on the one term thing. I don't believe that. This guy's ambitious. He wants to get elected again, and he's throwing
it off.
He
has an agenda, and his agenda, I honestly believe, is to reshape this, to destroy the United States of America that we know. The United States of America that was founded on biblical principles, the United States of America that was truly founded on personal responsibility and personal freedom, and make it into a socialist state.
Well, Obama has said, you know, we got a minute left here, Greg, but Obama, you know, came right out and said that homosexual relationships are as valid as heterosexual relationships. So, you know, he took it upon himself to say that it's homosexual relationships are as acceptable as God blessed, you know, relationships between man and woman.
It's funny because he had an ex-gay, you know, that campaigned for him, Donnie McClurkin, who sang, you know, and our friend Wayne Besson, the enemy of everyone, is screamed, yelled, and had a fit. Don't you dare let him sing. So what did Obama do? He didn't disinvite the ex-gay. What he did was he had an open homosexual black minister open the ceremony or the event in prayer.
Hey, that's diversity. We're going to have to cut it off here. And we're talking to Greg Quinlan. We'll have another segment with him, possibly two. Greg is the president of PFOX. You can find them at pfox.org. But if you want to get a lot of information about this issue, go to our website, Americans for Truth. Sign up for the Truth Academy. That's americansfortruth.org.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 11 p.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Stay informed and engaged on the issues of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with them as they work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. The Americans for Truth Hour, Saturdays at 11 p.m. on AM 1160.